You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, SFU's community radio station broadcasting live from Burnaby, BC.
Hello and welcome to this new edition of Viewpoints, where local news meets national audiences. On today's show, we'll be grasshopping across the country. In Ontario, some 200 students will have a brand new Catholic school. The province is investing $17 million in Drayden.
We can get this project done in 2 years. That's literally lightning speed, and I want to celebrate it today. It's a true example of collaboration for the benefit of our kids.
In Montreal, Quebec, the city is also investing, this time $21 million, into four affordable student residences, some 670 units up for grabs in a few years.
We hope we'll inspire other parties to follow with this new approach.
I think we will see the results probably in the next 3, 5, 10 years.
Two women take advantage of the pandemic to gather old and recent stories about their community. 640 pages later, their book hits the shelves.
And he found a boat on the shores of the Castor or something and filled all the holes with nuts and bolts and glue.
Back to Waterloo, Ontario, where the City Council listened to suggestions from the community and amended its plan to build affordable housing. And enough of bricks and mortar, Nova Scotia lobster fishermen reflect on a good year as the season wraps up on the south shore of Nova Scotia.
I've been real good season. Started off good, but didn't sound like it was going to be real good season, you know, all over. But now it was, I call it a real good season.
Welcome to Viewpoint. It's local news nationwide.
You are on the air with Viewpoints. Listen to all our stories on frequencynews.ca.
Thanks for being here once again this week. My name is Boris Chassain. First up, Nova Scotia lobster fishermen reflect on a good year as the season wrapped up on Nova Scotia's South Shore on May 31st. Some Queens County fishermen saying catches were up over the last year. Almost 1,700 licensed vessels fish along Nova Scotia's southwestern shore. The first day that fishermen set their traps is known locally as Dumping Day. The last day of the season is traditionally known as Landing Day. Ronnie Conrad, who has fished for over 44 years out of the smaller Western Berlin Wharf, said his catches were up 25% to 30% over the last year. Journalist Rick Conrad, based in Liverpool, Nova Scotia, spoke with fisherman Ronnie Conrad about the Landing Day, and no, they're not related.
That's the sound of lobster fishermen in West Berlin taking traps off their boat and putting them onto the wharf for the final time this season. Friday was the last day of lobster fishing season on Nova Scotia's South Shore, and fishermen at wharves in Queens County say it was a good one. Ronnie Conrad of West Berlin has been fishing for 44 years. He said conditions on the water were rougher than last year with more wind, but catches were up.
I've been real good season. It started off good, but didn't sound like it was going to be real good season, you know, all over. But now it was, I call it a real good season. We was up probably about stock-wise another 25-30%.
About 1,700 licensed vessels fish along Nova Scotia's southwestern shores, from Cow Bay near Halifax, right around the southwestern end of the province, to the Bay of Fundy. The season opened in Lobster Fishing Area 33 on November 26th. That's the area from Cow Bay to Shelburne. And it began a couple of days later in LFA 34, which takes in the rest of southwestern Nova Scotia to Digby County. Conrad said he thinks most fishermen in both districts did well.
Now, overall, I think everybody came out pretty good because Southwest, like District 34, was down all fall and all winter, but they had a real good spring.
He said he usually fishes about 25 or more kilometers offshore in the wintertime, leaving at 3 in the morning and getting back about 12 hours later. And for the first few days of the season, if catches are good, he and his crew will be out for up to 20 hours, hauling as many as 500 traps total, double what they would do on a normal day. This year, though, he decided to stick closer to the coast.
Normally, I'll go up there probably about 16, 17 miles in the wintertime, but this year I didn't venture out that far because there wasn't no lobsters offshore, but water got cold quick. It was started off colder than last year, too. Well, it keeps the catch down.
The lobster won't crawl cold water. And this spring, it warmed up quick, and we had an excellent spring. Everywhere along the coast, we had a real good spring.
38-year-old Mike Matitol from Sable River has been fishing most of his life. For the past 3 years, he's had his own boat out of Port Medway.
Every season's so much different. Last year was probably a little more in catch, but the average price through the winter helped us out because there were a few more lobsters through the winter as the water was a little bit warmer, right? The colder water made the winter pretty slow this year. Every season's different, though.
Matitol said prices started out around $9 a pound this season, went up as high as $20 in the winter when the catch was scarce, and settled around $7 a pound this spring. Just because the season's over, though, it doesn't mean the work stops. Fishermen will spend the summer and fall fixing up their boats, building new traps, and spending some time with their families. But you won't hear people like Matitol and Conrad complain.
It's a lifestyle, though, so it's not. I don't really know what it is comparable to other kind of work. You'd probably have to come do it and then tell me how much different it is than your job.
Well, that depends who you are. We don't find it hard. We like it.
Conrad says he's not going to retire yet.
Yeah, my wife wants to be done now, but the money's just too good yet, so I'm going to hang in for another year or two anyway.
I'm Rick Conrad.
Do you have questions or comments? Our email is radio@frequencynews.ca.
The province of Ontario is investing $17 million to build a new elementary Catholic school in Drayton. The new project was announced by Perth Wellington MPP Matthew Ray and Education Minister Stephen Lecce. The school will serve children in both the township of Mapleton and the town of Minto. It will include a child care center with 64 spaces for children under 4, and the elementary school will accommodate 222 children from kindergarten to grade 8. The school is expected to open in September 2026. In Fergus, Ontario, here's Kate Stockman.
The province is investing $17.3 million to build a new Catholic elementary school in Drayton. Education Minister Stephen Lecce and Perth Wellington MPP Matthew Ray announced the funding Friday. Lecce says building schools and childcare spaces is a priority for the Conservative government.
The former government, the Liberals, closed 600 schools. They used to take 6 to 10 years to build them. And here we are in a rural community of Mapleton announcing that we're going to be building a new, brand new elementary school, $17 million investment for over 200 kids, plus a child care center for 64 children, the first of its kind in this community, a licensed child care center.
The school will include a child care center with 64 spaces for children under 4. And the elementary school will include 200 spaces for children from kindergarten to grade 8. Mapleton Mayor Greg Davidson says he is especially excited about the child care spaces.
Well, we have so many people here that have moved to the community that are, you know, they come, they go, well, okay, well, where's the child care? And then we say, well, we don't have child care. And they're like, well, I moved to this community for child care and I work here, but now I have to go somewhere else to drop my children off because there's no home space left. So we had some people actually going to Cambridge, dropping their kids off, coming back to work. So this is going to make a huge difference for those local people.
Ray was given a lot of credit for pushing the project to get provincial funding.
When Mayor Davidson mentioned, he called me relatively after I was elected 2 years ago. That was basically when I started taking up the file on that. And I was appointed parliamentary assistant to Minister Lecce, which did help in that because I understood how the internal process works on the Ministry of Education side.
Lecce says the cooperation between the Township of Mapleton, the Wellington District Catholic School Board, the County of Wellington, is making sure this project gets completed quickly.
Because of MPP Ray's strong leadership and advocacy, but the collaboration of the community and school board and ministry, we can get this project done in 2 years. That's literally lightning speed, and I want to celebrate it today. It's a true example of collaboration for the benefit of our kids.
The new school is to be located at the end of Bonniewood Drive in Drayton. It's expected to open in September of 2026.
You're on the air with Viewpoints.
And to Montreal, Quebec now, where Mayor Valérie Plante and city officials announced a few days ago a $21 million investment into 4 affordable student residences. 670 units will be built. The city says the grant, which is going to the not-for-profit utility organization, is part of a new portfolio approach to housing. Instead of helping fund and approve one project, they're collaborating collaborating on several at once to help speed up the process. The announcement is part of the city's larger housing strategy, Loger Plus. Valérie Plante, the mayor, set the goal of having 20% of Montreal's housing as social and affordable units by 2050. $3 million and the streamlined permit process will help towards that goal. Tenants groups say the city is not using all the tools at its disposal when it comes to fighting the housing crisis. Here's Jules Bugel in Montreal, Quebec.
The city of Montreal is pitching in to help students find affordable housing. On Thursday, the mayor and city officials announced a $21.4 million contribution toward building four student residences. The city says the grant, which is going to the not-for-profit UTSIL, is part of a new portfolio approach to housing. By giving them support for multiple projects at once, the city is helping speed up the process overall. Here's UTSIL's Laurent Lévesque speaking to reporters on Thursday.
With the ambitious goal of achieving 20% of nonprofit, non-market housing in Montreal by 2050, which we wholeheartedly support, we need to innovate in the ways to finance projects. And this portfolio approach that the city is announcing today is a new way to finance nonprofit housing. So there's the first order of impact of accelerating housing for about 1,000 students in the next few years that we will be happy to build in this partnership. But there's a second order impact of innovating in financing nonprofit housing with methods that we hope will inspire other parties to follow with this new approach and hopefully accelerate dozens more of nonprofit housing projects.
UTSIL already has two apartment buildings for students in Montreal, with rents 10 to 30% below market rate. At least two others are currently in development, including one partnership with the Student Society of McGill University. Of the four new projects, one is a collaboration with Concordia and one with Polytechnique, so their students will get priority access to units. The new buildings will be in Pointe Saint-Charles, Griffintown, Outremont, and the East Plateau, and will come out to 670 units in total, which could house almost 1,000 students. The city's funding, which comes from developer payments from the RMM or 2020 bylaw, represents around 10% of the total needed to get the buildings off the ground. Mayor Valérie Plante said this portfolio approach might be a first, but certainly won't be the last.
So our goal is to give enough resources to UTSIL to start many projects at the same time. Loger Plus is all about that, how we want to accelerate housing projects and working with a non-for-profit organization that we've had a long relationship with and it's working very well. So we want to support them and there will be more of that coming soon.
This is the second major housing announcement all this week. On Tuesday, the city announced they're adopting a target of 20% social and affordable housing by 2050. Starting in 2025, they're devoting $3 million to support the development of those projects over the next 3 years. They're also putting in place 120-day targets for the approval of construction permits. Currently, that process takes an average of over a year. Those targets were still top of mind for Mayor Plante at this latest announcement on Thursday.
Ultimately, our goal within the next 10 years is to hopefully come up with about 120,000 units, all kinds. It can be, you know, out of the market, but also in the market. And we would like by 2050 that half of them is out of the market. So there's a lot of work to be done. But I feel like in Montreal, we have the ecosystem is very strong, very connected. Those objectives that I'm sharing is not, you know, the city of Montreal itself. It's really working together that we decided that those were the goals to keep Montreal an affordable city in North America. So the impact, though we're pushing, we're taking all the opportunities to go faster, I think we will see the results probably in the next 3, 5, 10 years.
But tenants groups have said the city's position falls short of what's needed. Here's Cédric Dussault, spokesperson for the Regroupement des Comités Logements, Association de Locataires de Québec, also known as the RECLAC, speaking with CKUT after Tuesday's announcement.
Those measures won't change anything to the housing crisis. First, because it is based on the premise that the problem, the main, if not the only problem of this housing crisis is the supply. Another thing that is a little bit funny to hear from this announcement is that they are speaking of so-called affordable units as out of the market units, but they are in the market units. The rent is based on an average rent in a specific sector. So by definition, it is linked to the market. So what we need is, measures that are protecting tenants. You got to protect the affordable units from speculators. So you got to control the rents. You got to protect tenants against evictions. And the other thing, if you want to build, you have to build social housing. When Projet Montréal was came into office, they promised social housing, and they are not delivering on social housing. They are trying to say that so-called affordable housing is social housing, but it's not.
At Thursday's press conference, Mayor Plante said she hopes the government of Quebec will do more to help Montreal meet its social housing goals.
And when it comes to social housing, the people in charge of, which is part of their mandate, is the provincial government and also the federal, but mostly the provincial. It's part of what they are supposed to accomplish. And they're doing it, and they've been doing it. The city of Montreal is really doing everything they can to support the provincial government into, you know, accelerating the development of units. Also, by the fact that we are buying lands and buildings, that we are more than willing. We buy them so we can offer them at a very low price for non-for-profit organization to do social housing. That's our goal. So I really feel the city of Montreal is doing a lot to support social housing.
I'm Jules Bijal. Thanks for listening.
On the air with Viewpoints.
Citizens of the Waterloo region have had their say into what is being built around them. In response to community feedback, the City of Waterloo has modified its plans to develop vacant city land near Rim Park, a win for citizen engagement. The project in question aims to provide over 700 homes in a sustainable, affordable neighborhood with commercial opportunities. The city has submitted the modified plan and now expects approval for the Minister's Zoning Order, or MZO. An MZO authorizes the Minister of Municipal Affairs to fast-track zoning changes on specific pieces of land. Financial structure and long-term affordability remain critical questions still to be resolved. Details with MP Homes in Kitchener, Ontario.
The City of Waterloo's modified plan to build an affordable neighborhood is now bound for ministerial approval. Using a Provincial Ministerial Zoning Order, or MZO, the city hopes to expedite the development of a 25-acre plot of land in Waterloo into a mixed-use affordable housing development. The site is at 2025 University Avenue East, near Rim Park, and has been vacant since 2000. The City of Waterloo's public input included an online survey and a community meeting in early May. Thanks to those consultations, modifications to the development plan include increased height allowances and the introduction of commercial spaces. Michelle Lee, the executive officer to the CAO at the City of Waterloo and who was presenting the report to council, noted that the community encouraged the city to increase the maximum height of buildings from 6 stories to 12 stories. The community also requested more commercial units within the neighborhoods to address local needs. Other concerns raised by the community included the environmental impact, traffic management, and housing affordability. Michelle outlined these concerns.
So just summarizing that feedback, we heard that there was a concern about the impact of a residential development of this scale on the rural and suburban character of the surrounding area in close proximity to the site. We heard from the community that there was a need for more affordable and attainable housing. And some individuals encouraged us to go a little bit more assertively towards higher heights and higher densities to maximize the potential use of this site. We heard from a number of individuals about concerns for the environment, particularly the local natural features that were located on the site, as well as individuals that wanted to see a development that would be sustainable in terms of things like net zero or green building design, operate with maximum operational efficiency going into the future. We did hear widely from the community that there was a shortage of commercial opportunities in this part of the city. and that any future development on this site, if it were to proceed, should have some commercial opportunities, not only to service the individuals living on that site, but also individuals living in the broader east side of the city.
Michelle also discussed feedback from housing providers on the challenges in building affordable and attainable housing due to high construction costs. The housing providers emphasized the need for incentives and subsidies to achieve affordability.
In terms of the feedback we received from the housing providers that we interviewed, we confirmed that affordable and attainable housing is really challenging to build in this current market given high construction costs. And so incentives and subsidies can really help achieve higher levels of affordability and attainability, allowing for a mix of affordability. So some deeply affordable units, but then some more lower end of market units can help a developer balance the costs, whereby the market units end up helping to subsidize the more deeply affordable units.
Michelle addressed concerns about water supply for the new development, noting local residents' worries about potential impacts on well water.
So with that in mind, we would be conducting well monitoring in advance and during the construction to ensure that we are not impacting those wells.
Staff estimate a call out for housing development proposals could go out in July, and the decision could be before council by December. But key questions about financial structure and long-term affordability still need to be resolved. While city staff favor land lease models where the land is leased to developers for building and operating, models like cooperative housing and non-profit-owned housing will also be considered.
So there are a number of ways we could proceed, and I think the way I would recommend is to work under the principle that we want to make sure that these lands remain in community ownership of some kind and reward proposals, higher marks for those who propose that the land remain in community ownership. It's possible that if we think that land lease is a viable option, and I think it's certainly something worth considering, we could award proposals that have a land lease as part of their package, meaning that we would own it, but we would lease the land to a developer that would then build and operate the development.
Sean Campbell, the executive director from Union Sustainable Development Cooperative, reminded councillors that the ultimate goal is to create an inclusive and sustainable community with long-term affordable rents.
Let's make sure that if it's affordable on day one, it's affordable in perpetuity. And that can be achieved by making sure that it's trusted organizations that will be owning these properties forever. When we think of all the nonprofit housing co-ops, the charities and nonprofits, how do we bring different organizations that have been renting successfully properties in our community for decades, whether it is an organization like Victoria Park Homes, the many housing co-ops that we have as well, and bring in these trusted partners in order to help them grow and service these areas?
Councillor Julie Wright asked about the financial challenges of building co-op housing, and in return, Sean described how co-op initiatives raise funds and the importance of access to CMHC funding.
In terms of financing more generally, it's really important that we're able to access CMHC financing. You cannot do this work without CMHC. They make sure that they're protecting the public interest and their role in that, and they're quite serious about it, which is one of the reasons why things like land leases can be a little tough in order to make work with CMHC as the financer. And there's actually new nonprofit housing co-op funding that's expected to launch within the next year as well. This is a pretty unique time. This certainly hasn't happened in my lifetime in terms of the scale of construction, the type of government support that's available for us to do this.
Although questions on funding and management models remain, council endorsed the updated plan for a mixed-use community and directed staff to submit a request for an MZO to change the site zoning accordingly. I'm MP Holmes. Thanks for listening.
And we close the show with a feel-good story about two women, Connie Johnston and Jen Pershick, who love their community so much that they decided to write a book about it. It's entitled Voices of Our Town. Johnston started the project years ago, gathering stories and anecdotes from residents of Russell, but realized she would need help to put all the stories together. Johnston and Pershick are pleased the book is finally out, all 640 pages of it. It will be launched on June 15. Here's an excerpt from Candace Vetter's conversation with them. She's in Carlsbad Springs, Ontario.
One example I use is the old banker from 1907 or something that worked in the Bank of Ottawa on the corner of Mill and Concession. And he recounts what it was like to be required to live right in the bank and provide not only the services of the bank, but the security as well. So he'd go behind the curtain and that's where he'd sleep.
Used to get robbed, eh?
Yeah, exactly. going back that far and then as recent as just, last year and people telling, like the one young lad that tells the story about getting the vote. And he found a boat on the shores of the Castor or something and filled all the holes with nuts and bolts and glue. And him and his buddy sailed down the Castor. So it's we appreciate that it's not all history. But right. And the other thing that we've got to mention is the fact that Wendell Stanley's from Swamp and Chanty was in no way ever wanted to compete with his wonderful works because it's what Jen and I have often said, we had the advantage of having computers and being able to communicate with emails and that sort of thing, where in the mid-1980s when he did his, it was all by hand and it is such an amazing, we couldn't say enough about the works of him and we certainly didn't want to take anything. So he talks more, I believe, about the early settlers and the history of Russell, where we talk about the stories of the people.
That's a cool thing to put them both together and look at them from those two different viewpoints. So pictures, Jen, maybe you could talk about that. What have you got for pictures in the book?
Actually, there is, I think, almost 1,800 photos.
Oh!
It was quite the job to edit them and make them perfect for the book. The breadth of them is just amazing from, modern era to all the way from what would you say would be the oldest one? Probably some of your family photos?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, back to the mid-1800s. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool that you've got those.
I'm very fortunate that most of my family members all settled around this area. Mm-hmm. So I have a great family history.
Well, we're almost out of time.
Indeed we are, Candace. That entire conversation can be found on frequencynews.ca if you want to hear the whole thing. For us at Viewpoints, many thanks to our journalists this week, Kate Stockman, Jules Bugiel, Rick Conrad, Candace Vetter, and N.P. Holmes. To our national editors, Maureen McEwen and Victoria Fenner. Viewpoints is produced by the Community Radio Fund of Canada with the help of your local community and college radio stations. I'm your host and producer, Boris Chassagne. It was nice to have you with us this week, and until the next, ciao.
Questions or comments? Our email is radio@frequencynews.ca.